Dutton Reel 2. When you got over to France, did you come into contact much with the French?
No.
So you had no particular impressions of them?
Never had anything to do with France.
From the various operations in which you were engaged, what were your general impressions of the quality of the German soldier?
Very good. Mm. Very good soldier.
Any particular ways in which they were either outstandingly good or...
I thought their engineering was very good. Trenches and dugouts and that sort of thing. Advanced with us.
In what ways?
Well, they had the men to do it, I don't know. Where they went deeper down, you know, into the ground than we did. That's where we found the first we found of these deep dugout was from them. Yeah. I'd never seen them in our lines and never come across them. They may have been there, but I never saw them.
Apart from the depths of their trenches, were there any other aspects of them which impressed you?
I don't think, no. Mm-hmm. No, they're just the same as ours.
What about them as sort of fighting soldiers? Were there any particular aspects of operations in which they were either very skillful or not so skillful?
They were very good. They hang on well. That's all I can say. They were good soldiers. They hung on. You couldn't put them out like you could perhaps some inferior troops. They fought well and they hung on well. Mm-hmm. That's my opinion. Apparently, in the end, they didn't do so bad, I'm told, in 1918, after I left there. Because they couldn't have done it the way they surrendered really so easily at the last few months of the war. Mm. They've had the guts knocked out of them. That's all it seems to me. Mm. Mm.
Apart from the French and the Germans, were there any other of the Allied or enemy forces of other nationalities who you had any particular impressions
of? No, I never saw them. The Portuguese were there, and I didn't see them. They had a division, I think it was there. And the Americans come out in 18, and I had left then, so I didn't see them either.
What about the Allied Commonwealth forces? Do you come
in contact with them? Were quite good. Yeah. Australian and New Zealand were quite good. Yeah. Mm. I shouldn't say that any better. They were good fighters, too. Mm. Well, say, after all, the same breed as us, didn't they, really?
Yeah. Did you notice any differences that struck you about any of the Commonwealth forces as compared with the British and the way they operated?
No, not a bit. Mm-hmm. They were all, Canadians were with the Canadian division, for two divisions. Well, they were mostly British people. I remember the Canadians. When they came out, first of all, they were attached to my division, some of them. And they were simply fellows who had been emigrated in the last few years for the war sort of business, you know. Yeah. And they speak particularly from Scotland, really. And mine was a high-end regiment, so they much the same sort of type fellow.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You said something about the food already, but I wonder if you could go into that a bit more. What sort of food did you get? What kind of diet did you have?
Well, as I say, we missed the kitchens, travelling kitchens, but when we come out, you can't compare with the trenches, of course. They give us all sorts of things in the trenches, too, to try and help us, you know.
What sort of things?
Oil, what was it again we used to get? Little burner sort of thing, a fat oil we used to burn sort of thing. We could make a bottle of kettle, and boil a kettle and that sort of thing, canteen. Mm. But I don't think there's anything else. We had more sugar. I tell you what I did find, that when I come home to my wife, she's in Bedford at the time, I was getting jolly sides more rations and easier than she was getting at home. That's what I knew. That's what I thought, sugar, tea, and that sort of thing.
When you were in the trenches, in the front, what sort of food were you able to get then?
Oh, we had our daily rations.
Yeah, well, what did they consist of?
Well, what did we get now? Well, of course, I think we had mostly tinned beef and corned beef. Frey Bento's corned beef, I think. And bread, we had bread and butter. And you make your tea there, you add your tea and sugar. Oh, I think we'd everything. We can't grumble. No soldier can grumble about food in France in the First War.
When you were out of the front line, in the rear areas...
Your travelling kitchens, I see, to give you a good meal. Yeah. Whatever it was, Irish Jew, whatever he liked, I see. Oh, get a lovely feed outside.
So food was never a problem?
No. My goodness, no, not in our army.
Good. No. How regularly did you get rest periods from the trenches?
Missed the front when the trenches formed up. Mm. Well, we formed up in trenches proper in Messines, under the Messines Ridge where I was. And we spent the winter there, 14, 15. And we used to go out 4 days in the line, four in brigade support, 4 days in the line, four in divisional support further back. Then back again, so repeat that again.
Mm-hmm.
Four in, four out in support, brigade support, four in the line, four out in divisional support.
I see.
I went down that way all the winter.
Yeah, yeah. When you were in either brigade support or divisional support, were you kept very busy, or was that really
a
rest
period? Oh, no, we were allowed to be given sports, and if there's any of these local army theatre sports sellers, you know, we used to go to them. Armateers, we were near Armateers. We could go up to them, and we used to get, that time, we were getting trucks coming, and Army Service Corps lorries were on the scene coming that time. So we used to take parties into there, into Armateers, to the supports. Mm.
So brigade support and divisional support wasn't very demanding. It enabled you to rest up a bit.
Oh, it did, yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you cleaned yourself up and things.
Mm. Yeah. Was that very necessary?
What?
Cleaning yourself up.
Oh, I think so. Get the mud off yourself and that. See, the trenches. After all, you come out and all mud. Of course, when we started the show, I was in a high-end regiment. We started off, we went out with gaiters, you see, and high-end shoes. And the red and white dice hose, you can't see them here, hose tops, red and white dice. Well, of course, the trenches are absolutely useless, of course. The mud used to sink up under the heel of the gaiter into your shoe, of course. Well, then we were given high-end the boots and a short ankle putty to go around. And not the red and white hose, but the khaki hose. And we finished the war that way. That was much better. Well, of course, the last war, they didn't have the kilt at all, I believe.
Yeah.
In that one.
Yes. In the period you were in France, how often did you get home leave?
Well, my first leave was in Christmas 1914. I was a regimental sergeant major, of course, and CO, of course, sent me off first, about 3 men, a battalion. Once I was away, by the way, because this truce took place in Messines, among that line there, and the Germans and our people fraternized. When I come back off leave about New Year's Day, I found this is all that happened, you see. Anyhow, I went about, about every year, I suppose, I'd leave.
Well, would that be a couple of weeks?
Oh, no, a week.
A week?
A week, I think it was. Mm. I don't think more than a week.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What kinds of recreation and entertainment did you have?
Football. Football. We come out to rest, we watch football. Playing against other battalions and that. Oh, yes, we had all that. Mm-hmm. In fact, we've got sports up there. When we come out, a bit longer rest from this. Occasionally, you've got a longer race. You've got the whole brigade come out together, you see, and we're all assembled in some locality within easy distance of each other. Well, then you'd have boxing tournaments and competitions and wagon cleaning and horse turnout and all that sort of thing, you know. And sport and actual sports, running. That. Oh, yes, that's when we had the long reserve, out of the trenches altogether.
Was there much in the way of organized entertainment provided for you? I mean, like concert parties and things like
that? Yes, there was. You mean, not regimental.
Well, any kind of...
Yes, there was, yes. Oh, we had troops concerts there, because there's some very, as you can imagine, some very skillful fellows amongst these troops, you know. And as I'm saying, at Armateer, we had a very good concert there in 1914 winter. We had a very good concert in Armateer. And they got some of the local girls to do it. Well, that's what they originated of, the girl, Margaret from Armentier, what do they call that, the song now? That's what they started there that winter, 14.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, yes, there's some good fellows. I can't remember who they were, but they were. I've been to concerts there. And, of course, when we got in front of Arras, we had the Arras behind us, we come out there, they had a theatre there we could go to, which hadn't been knocked about very much. So, I think so. I wouldn't grumble about that at all. People, the town was there, the villages were there, and the Stanleys were open, and they could easily enjoy themselves.
When you were in the front line, when you were actually in the trenches in the front line, was there any way in which you could entertain yourselves then, in periods when you weren't actually under fire?
None. No, unless you had a game of cards with your friend or something, that sort of game, you know.
There must have been long periods in which you were just sitting and waiting.
Well, that's all, yes, that's all it was, yes.
Was it possible to fill those periods with anything apart from cards?
I don't think so, could you? You couldn't do it. You can't get, couldn't get men assembled in a trench. You don't know, you're inviting a shell into you.
Yeah.
Oh, no, no. Okay. You weren't in groups. You didn't live in groups in the trenches. You were in line. And it was occupying the trenches. If you were in support, behind battalion support, about 100 yards, 200 yards, it wasn't advisable ever to get in groups, you know. One shell in amongst you, and the whole bag of lot goes up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One thing which you read a lot about in the histories of the First World War is that the troops were always singing. Was that your experience?
Well, I don't think so, really. No, after all, people over here don't sing, always do they? Really, the same type of man in it, really.
No.
And the same fella, you don't walk about singing. No, I don't think so. If you're on the march, yes.
Yeah.
On the march, certainly.
What sort of things would you sing?
Oh, some vulgar, some musical, and something that sort of thing, you know. And then, of course, we had, when we could get clear of the enemy, we had a piper.
Yeah.
Our pipers used to play.
Yeah.
They were always with us.
Yes. Do you remember any of the songs that you used to sing? Some, perhaps, which may not be so well known.
I don't really know. I can't remember.
Can't remember?
No.
Okay.
As a member, I wasn't marching with the troops, you see, really, as my...
Yeah. When you were in France, how much information were you getting about the situation at home in England?
Well, we got the Daily Mail every day, you know.
Yeah.
When we went out of support, we always got the Daily Mail, the Paris edition Daily Mail.
Mm-hmm.
That gave us all we really wanted, really. And then the brigade was every week. We had a paper come out like that. One of those from division, I think it was, or I'm not sure where it originated. No, I think it originated from the army headquarters, I think. They give you all the information, the whole army, all right from right to left.
Did you feel then that you were getting quite a lot of information about what was going on at home?
I think so. We got we had the Daily Mail. We couldn't, we didn't want any more.
Mm.
They told us it was going.
Yes. Well, when you had the papers sent out, there would obviously be a lot of information in them about the war itself. What was your impression of the accuracy of the newspaper reports that you read?
Well, I never read them.
Did you
know? I know. I had the Daily Mail, only one. I never read any more. I don't think you send a paper at home until I come home on leave, and that's the only time I saw them.
Yeah. Mm. When you got home on leaves, how much information did the people who were at home seem to have about the war?
Another question, isn't it? I don't know, really. I come home, didn't talk about the war, really, and people you're glad to see you, because after all, I come home to places people I didn't know, you know. Mm. My wife in Bedford, but I was never in Bedford. Mm. I was a soldier, of course. Mm. I was in the army all the time. And so was she, of course, until we married, until the war broke out. So I don't know, really. They're all, of course, at the end of it, getting rather tired of it, I suppose, like everybody else was.
Mm. At the time, what was your general opinion of the ability of the senior army commanders and the way they were conducting the war?
Oh, well, I was too low grade for that sort of thing.
You didn't have an opinion?
No. I had no opinion, really. Yeah. No. You were there to do what you were told, and that's the job of the soldier.
Yeah. Was there no stage of the war at which you felt critical of the way...
No, and I don't think any of the men did either. Mm. I must say the men went right through it. Our army, you know, went right through without any of that business of, you know, what's happened to the French army, for instance, that sort of it. None of that with our army. Never thought of it.
Did you see any evidence at all of any general dissatisfaction amongst the soldiers with the senior commanders?
No, never.
Fine.
I never in all my entire I have any general criticised by by the soldiers, never.
Do you ever hear any politicians criticise? About the way the, you know, the political management...
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. It comes into this at all, you know. It is a servant soldier. You don't bother about this sort of thing, you know. You seem to have no interest in the in those days, in the case of politics. The only thing I remember very much so was the day we heard that Lord Kitchener had been drowned in the North Sea. Troops felt that. They did feel it. Lord Kitchener was drowned. That was the sort of thing that affected them, because you're a great, great man of the army, you know, a great the soldier.
Sort of father figure.
Ah, he was a great soldier, soldier he was. Mm. Yeah. He was the outstanding soldier. And when he went and got drowned on a battleship in the North Sea, it had felt it very much so.
Yeah.
And of course, if you felt, you also felt a very ridiculous man. Like now, we're talking about Sir Edward Bradford, my colonel. The day he was killed on the Aisne, we climbed up the Aisne, the heights of the Aisne. He was killed as soon as we got up there. And that went through the battalion, my battalion, very much so, because he was a well-known man too, a great sportsman and a great soldier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Was there ever any stage of the war